Good evening and welcome to the Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host on the first Monday of every month, when we take you on a culinary tour of the Lehigh Valley and its amazing food scene. Tonight we'll have two guests. First we'll have Matt Salvaterra, owner of Salvaterra's Gardens, a produce farm in the Albertus area. And then we'll be joined by Billy Canupis, owner of Billy's Downtown Diner, with locations in Allentown and Bethlehem. But let's get things rolling now with Matt Salvaterra. Matt, welcome to the Inside Dish.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Matt, I read that Salvaterra's Garden started about 9 years ago in Allentown as a small urban garden. So when did you move to the Albertus area in western Lehigh County, and why'd you do that?
We started, it was, we had a row home, basically, or twin in Allentown. So it was a hobby. So we were just growing food, and my wife and I. And once we kind of took up all the space in our in that area, even the in the sidewalk, the grass strip, you know, in front of the house, we were growing there. And then it got to a point, then I started going around looking for places to rent land. But we still weren't selling food. I was renting little places in the Lehigh Valley just to grow more food for my wife and I. And we were canning everything and, you know, doing that whole deal. And then it got to a point the one year there was just so much produce sitting on our front porch. It was kind of getting ridiculous. And we said, you know, maybe we should start selling some. But it was still a hobby. And that's when we started looking for a farm. And we eventually landed in Albertus. We were looking for a while, found that the farm we're living on now, and it was kind of the perfect spot for us when we found it. And that was about the time we were starting to get into the farmer's market, our first farmer's market.
Well, when was it along the way that this went from hobby to, you know, maybe this could be our profession and our livelihood? What was going on in your mind at that time?
It's funny the way that it worked, because we never thought it would be a profession. I was a teacher in Bethlehem School District. My wife was working for Wegmans in Human Resources, and it was first a hobby. Then when we started to see there was a market for it, we started to look and say, well, maybe my wife really wanted to stay home with children. So we said, well, maybe I could continue to teach. We could run the farm. That'll give us enough income for her to stay home. That was the first goal. And she left Wegmans first. I kept teaching, and, you know, we were running the farm. And she left Wegmans. She was working on the farm, and then she was pregnant. Then when we had our first child, we started having employees, but I was still teaching at the time. So I still didn't see it as maybe viable to do this farm, you know, as just that single occupation for the whole family. And then it got to a point where it was a make or break, the one year where we were either going to get larger and go after it a little more, which it looked like it was viable, but the only way to do it was for me to leave teaching at that point. Or I was just not going to leave teaching, and we were going to stay at the level we were at. Problem was, doing both jobs was tough. So that's when we finally decided. It was a slow process. It was like an 8-year process.
Okay.
But it actually helped us out, because we subsidized our farm through our own off-farm work until we could get it financially viable.
We talked a little bit about the demand for the type of food and produce you're selling. How has that changed over the last maybe 8 years or 9 years since you've been doing this, in terms of what people expect from you and what people want from you?
Well, there was one of my friends, he's older than I am. He was doing this 10 years prior to us starting. And he had to go out to the green market in New York City, because there was nowhere in the Lehigh Valley you could sell, you know, local organic food. There was no options. When we came along right at the perfect time where it just started to increase. And when we got into the first farmer's market over at Easton, that was at about the point where you saw year to year, you know, you're doubling the amount of people coming to the market, tripling the amount of people. And, you know, the restaurants were asking for the food, health food stores. I mean, it was like it was happening everywhere. You also saw a lot more farms coming on the scene, too, because of that demand. So it's been a steady increase, you know, as the years have gone on. you know, which has been great for us. It's allowed us to grow the business.
And what sort of items do you grow on the farm? I think your website says more than 100 items. So,
we grow different varieties. I mean, I would say 40 different types of vegetables. Within those vegetables, there's multiple varieties.
And how do you determine what to grow?
We started off, because it was a hobby, we started off doing things, heirloom type vegetables, things that we liked that taste really good. And, you know, but when you get into it commercially, it changes everything. So you have to start to grow more what people recognize, what people want. So, for example, we will grow heirloom tomatoes, but we can't. We sell far more just red, round, regular tomatoes than we ever do heirloom, mostly because that's just what consumers see and want. So we kind of tend, as the years have gone on, we've whittled it down to, you know, growing things that look more like that the consumer will recognize. Because it's hard sometimes. If it's not recognizable, it's a hard sell when you're trying to sell it.
Well, speaking of selling, I know in the U.S. we primarily have a food distribution system dominated by a lot of big farms, a lot of them out west, large wholesalers and supermarket chains. So as a small local farmer, how do you find a way to get your product into the hands of consumers?
There's a lot of different ways. We started off doing farmers markets because for us it was just more comfortable that way because you were not on the hook. You know, when we weren't good at farming, when we were first starting and we didn't have any of the techniques and understanding of how to produce vegetables, there was less stress on you if you were taking vegetables to a farmer's market because if, you know, your tomatoes got hit by late blight and you didn't have any, well, no one, you know, you didn't owe them to anybody. So, you know, once we got more comfortable, we started to set up with restaurants, health food stores, you know, because they're going to want your product in a timely fashion. They want to make sure it's coming weekly. So you have to be better at what you're doing.
They want a level of consistency expectation.
Yeah, and if you don't have that consistency, you just make a bad reputation, you know, for yourself. And then eventually we got into the CSA model where people buy shares. Now we didn't do that until much later when we were really comfortable where we knew we have enough product here, we can offer people, you know, they can have a choice in what they're getting even. Instead of these prepared boxes, and that really helped us out. But we didn't do it until about 9 years in, until we were really comfortable and knew, you know, I can produce a tomato yearly, you know, and probability's more on my side now that it's going to produce well.
And what were some of those lessons that you learned over time? We were talking about this a couple minutes ago, about how when you started, some of the mistakes that you made early on and some of the things that you kind of learned through practice. What are some of the key lessons that I think you took away in the early days?
I mean, as an organic farmer, the biggest thing that you get hit with is weeds once you start farming, you know, and it goes from gardening to farming. It's a much bigger area, so you really have to be prepared and know how to handle, you know, the systems on your farm. You have to know how to manage weeding, watering, yeah, any you name it. And then when you become a business, it becomes about efficiency. So you're constantly looking every year to become more efficient with your hours, with your steps, with, you know, how you're doing all your processes. So we learned that over time. The good part, I think, that when I look back on it, is we were working as we did it and as we were learning. So we were not going into this throwing, you know, with no money, throwing everything aside, saying, okay, I'm going to take whatever money I have and go into farming. Because, you know, looking at how difficult it was initially, I don't think we would have made it. I think we would have struggled and we would have just hit a really rough cycle of not being able to get ahead. So it did help us that we were working and kind of subsidizing ourselves off the farm until we got used to it and knew how to do it.
Well, I think along those lines, I think a lot of people have this romantic notion of the farmer, someone that's waking up early and hardworking and working the soil and looking up to the sky to see when it's going to be raining or sunning or be sunny. How far is that romantic notion from the truth, or is it close to the truth, or kind of depends on the day?
It, you know, we deal with a lot of a lot of employees that want to get into farming, and the thing they always say is, well, I want to work outside. The thing that a lot of people don't understand is it's every day outside. You don't have a choice. So there's about 10 nice days in the spring, 10 nice days in the fall, and everything in between there, you're usually uncomfortable. But the romantic notion of it, it's like any other business, I think, when you're starting. Like we were talking before with the person who's going to be on Next Run's restaurant, Billy, and you know, his stories of running a business are much very similar to my stories of starting a small business. I mean, you deal with the same kind of hardships, the same financial stresses. You know, the only thing I think is a little different for farming is it's more of a lifestyle because you're producing this product that you yourself are then going to use all the time too. Like my wife and I do it because we eat the food. You know, we're using it, so it's part of our lifestyle too. That I think is a little bit different as opposed to maybe, you know, going into plumbing or, but I think financially, business-wise, a lot of crossover. I think it's the same.
And do you think people are becoming, when I say people, consumers becoming more aware of where their food is coming from and they care more about it? Have you seen that over the last maybe 5 or 10 years?
I think definitely we had a huge increase in 10 years. And I think you're getting to a point in Lehigh Valley where it's tapering a little bit because a lot of people that might have been interested in this are now doing it. Now it's hard. Now you're looking to see how we can get to that next group of people. Where I think there's a lot of interest in organic food. But that may also mean organic food at Whole Foods or organic food at Wegmans. That doesn't necessarily mean local food, you know? So trying to get maybe some of those people into the farmer's market scene, into buying your produce through CSAs, that's the next challenge, I think.
And what are the challenges for Salvatera? Do you see getting larger, becoming more efficient? What's next for you?
We still have room, a lot of room for improvement. Just in terms of how much we're producing, we want to be able to sell more of it, becoming more efficient all the time. And then I think we'll hit us in a point in a couple of years where that happens, and then we have to look at, are we happy with where we're at, or do we want to, you know, scale it up and maybe rent a little more land, different, you know, by where we live, things like that. I think we'll come to that crossroad when it comes.
Well, maybe we'll have you back on again in 2 or 3 years and find out what's going on with Salvatera's Gardens. So, Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Best of luck with Salvatera's Gardens and for a great harvest this year.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
We're going to take a short break. Stay with us for the second half of The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Okay, welcome back to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. We're glad you can join us for WDIY's monthly program on the culinary arts. I'm your host, Mike Drabenstadt. For the second half of the show, we are joined by Billy Canupas from Billy's Downtown Diner in Bethlehem and Allentown. Billy, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into the restaurant business. What is the Billy's origin story?
Well, it was actually a calling. My father and mother are Greek, and my father came to the United States, started as a dishwasher, and in the kitchens he learned how to speak English, but also he was able to get a meal. And my parents didn't have enough money to have a babysitter, so my playground was his kitchen, and I was conveniently located between the broiler and the dish machine. So I was able to pick up on some pretty interesting language at a very young age, but I really marveled at the type of dishes that my father created. And after he passed away, he was my hero and my idol, and I wanted to be like him. So as hokey as it might seem, I stayed in the restaurant business and continued to cook because I feel like it's my way of staying in communication with him.
Now, you continued to cook at other restaurants before you opened Billy's in the year 2000?
Oh, correct. Absolutely. I lost him at a very young age. So at that point, I was working in some diners. I was washing dishes. My entire life, I've always been in the restaurant industry. I've never dabbled in anything else. I've never done construction, yard work, nothing. So it's always either been washing dishes, cooking, managing. My entire education revolved around restaurants, and that was it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that transition for you when you went from working from other people to working for yourself. What were some of those early lessons that you picked up after you opened Billy's in 2000?
Well, I knew when I, when my wife and I actually decided to start on Billy's. And Billy's, just so you know, the original name of the place was Rudy's Newsstand. It was my wife's idea to change the name to Billy's Downtown Diner because she didn't want anybody to get the credit for what I was doing and the type of dishes that I wanted to do. But it was the main reason why I wanted to go and start off my own business was twofold. Number one, my bosses were pretty bipolar. They were mean. And I didn't want to have anyone having a sword over me. The second thing is I felt whatever they could do, I could do better. The third thing was I was just tired of the abuse of having to deal with these people that just felt that they were better. And so my father always felt that the United States had more opportunities than anywhere else, and that if you're going to live in this country, you should embrace capitalism. And I just took his advice and stayed on the path of restaurants.
Okay. I know you talked about different dishes and different creations, and one of the things you say with Billy's is that it's not your ordinary diner. What does that mean to your customers in terms of the food that is served at Billy's?
Well, I'd like to think that all of our menu is pretty unique. Now, that does not mean you cannot come in and grab classic dishes. That also doesn't mean that we have created ingredients that you're not going to find anywhere else. But what I saw was that there was a void in the breakfast world. I felt that it was just hokey and very plain. And we wanted to play with our food and create dishes that you wouldn't find in any other diner. And we just decided that we're not going to be your ordinary diner. We are not going to follow in the paths of them. We're not going to have liver and onions, chicken croquettes, French food, Italian and Greek food, and then do breakfast. We wanted to focus on doing one thing and doing it well and being as unique as possible.
Now, how far beyond ordinary do you feel that you can take something, kind of like a painter? When do you know to put that last brush stroke on a dish that makes it not ordinary but doesn't go too far?
Well, you know, that is not an easy question because people's palates are sensitive. And for example, I'm not a sweet guy. Well, I mean, I'm a nice guy, but I'm not a sweet guy. So I'm not huge into sweets. So I don't know how far I can push the envelope on that and with the ingredients. So my wife will come in and then we'll discuss it with our crew. But we look for certain types of flavor profiles and everything needs to make sense. You know, like I wouldn't put anchovies in a French toast. You know, we don't go that far out. We just, you know, it's just a way that we'll use ingredients. That's all.
And I guess still staying within the bounds of a diner model, but just maybe extending those boundaries a little bit.
Yeah, pretty much so. Uh-huh. Pretty much so.
Let's talk a little bit about the diner's place in today's restaurant scene. You have in the Lehigh Valley, an amazing number of ethnic places. There's fine dining. There's fast casual chains. There's prepared food at supermarkets like we haven't seen in 10 years. Why has the diner survived? And what's it going to take to continue surviving in the next 5 or 10 years?
That's an interesting question, and it's a loaded question. So I think that people are always going to be drawn to the classics in one way or another. I think people will always want to go back to comfort food. It's really hard to eat, steaks every day and French and all these things. So I think that one of the things that we do very well is we appeal to the palates of the everyday person, the person that just wants to eat something good, quick, and healthy. And in regards to maintaining the longevity, that really revolves around the work, maintaining quality, maintaining the levels of service, running a good operation. It's very important to be very consistent in what you do in order to have longevity. What would be like the death of us, if we decided we wanted to do Lithuanian cuisine and just drop the base of business? So we continually evolve with our menu as ingredients get more eclectic and change, but also at the same time, we try to maintain the conservativeness of the palate as well.
Let's talk a little bit about the balance between being a business person and being an artist in terms of providing food. We were chatting with that a little bit before we got on air here, that there needs to be a business sense to what you do, but you can't lose that passion for coming up with a new dish and exploring some new things. And how do you reconcile that as a restaurant owner?
Well, again, that's a good question. There's a lot to it. So there's the art of food, and then there's the business of running a restaurant. So you really need to marry those two worlds, and you really have to make them be cohesive and deal with one another. And pretty much it comes down to knowing your base of business, knowing your customers, and having an understanding as to what they want to pay and what they're willing to pay. And that's something that you draw on from experience and doing the same thing all the time.
You have the location in the north side of Bethlehem, and you're also in Allentown as of 2014, correct?
Correct.
And you're looking at a location in Easton?
Yes.
Is there something about the Lehigh Valley's downtowns that make Billy special or are special to Billy's?
There's a lot to that.
You could be right off the highway, off an exit.
Well, so when my wife Yana and I were dating and we would go off these off the beat places in New York and Manhattan and thinking about the dream and how to build our dream, we fell in love with like a lot of the different downtowns. And in all honesty, the Lehigh Valley has been experiencing an amazing renaissance. I mean, if you take a look at the restaurants in Allentown and where it was 15 years ago or 20 years ago, take a look at Bethlehem and take a look at Easton. And these communities are just expanding and there's a thirst for it. And I love the old homes and the decor. And I think it's just really, really cool. And I didn't want to be, not that there's anything wrong with it, I didn't want to be one of those gaudy, big, gigantic places. I just wanted to be nice, elegant. I wanted to be more on the boutique side of things and something that would fit into the community. So I felt that we have amazing communities. And in all honesty, Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton, at the sake of being redundant, the renaissance they're experiencing is unbelievable, and there are some great quality restaurants there.
And do you feel in some ways that the diner is a gathering place for people, where sometimes people say that as a bar or pub, maybe after 5 o'clock, but for breakfast or for lunch, a place where people can come together?
I think the thing that makes our place really unique is that if you come in by yourself, you're never going to feel like you're lonely. You're never going to feel like you're all alone or you're being watched. So, we try to make everything cool with cool music and the large TVs and incredible service and good presentation. And we don't ignore our guests. And that's what I think drives it to be as a gathering place.
And one final question. This is kind of to appease my curiosity over the years. You mentioned your Greek ancestry, and I'm just curious, what is it with Greeks and diners? Is it the hospitality? Is it the hard work ethic? Is it that Greece is kind of at the crossroads of all these culinary things? It just seems like it's part of the culture, and you guys do something special with it.
Well, I'll answer this. In my case, my father was born in Sparta, Greece. This is during the time that the Nazis were invading Greece. And my grandmother had several children, and she was a widower. So every day she would have this big stew outside. Now, eating at that time was not a right but a privilege. And pretty much what happened was she would always say, the kids would be playing, and say, "Mom, when's the food going to be ready? When's the food going to be ready?" And she would say, "Almost, almost." But there was never anything in that pot. It was just water. So they would go to bed and fall asleep. So my father came to the United States. His pain drove him here. And he went into a restaurant because that assured him being able to have a meal. And so, because it didn't require a lot of language, he was able to learn how to speak. And from watching people do their thing, he learned. And that's how he fell into it. So it was really, he was looking for a meal, and he wound up feeding, you know, hundreds and thousands of people in his community. So
that's a great story to end with, Billy. Thank you for sharing that. Billy, thank you for joining us on The Inside Dish. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much. It was awesome. Take care.
Best of luck for continued success in your downtown areas. And thank you all for being at the table with us for The Inside Dish. Join us again next month when we'll continue our exploration of the region's diverse and growing food scene with two new guests. I'm Mike Drabenstad, and this is Lehigh Valley Art Salon.